Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy wherever they get their podcasts.
Delivering all the news, the informed views, and just telling great motorsport stories since 2003. Powered by the racetalk.com. This is On the Grid.
Yes, you are listening to the On the Grid podcast. Back for another week. Richard Crail here. Tony Shebeki is away this week, probably buying another ill-fated racehorse that won't make the Melbourne Cup like the last couple we've ascertained won't. Delighted to say that Mark Walker is here. Hello, Mark. Did you enjoy your Sandown 500 weekend?
I'm glad it happened. I'm very glad it happened because it's a great warm-up event for the Bathurst 1000. And I've got to tell you, Rich, I needed a warm-up event to get all the little kinks out of the system. We'll hit the mountain running and we're going to have a great Bathurst 1000 now that we've got the Sandown out of the way.
And I'm very pleased for you that you survived a Sandown weekend without destroying a very expensive camera lens. So well done you. That's a very good effort. We're going to launch straight into this with a guy who I think also had a very enjoyable Sandown 500 weekend, because not only was he in the big race itself, he was in Porsche Painter Dixon Carrera Cup Australia as well. We're talking about David Russell, who joins us on the show. Hello, D-Russ. Welcome to the show. Congratulations on a big weekend from you.
Yeah, thanks very much. Yeah, it was a busy weekend, as you say, doing Carrera Cup as well as supercar duties. I think there was over five sessions on Friday, and including that, there might have been, you know, a couple of little appearances here and there. Yeah, so look, it was pretty busy. I kept to myself over the weekend. I wasn't feeling great. I had a bit of a chest infection, and you know, night fevers, the whole shebang. I didn't say nothing to anyone about it. The crew knew I was a bit crook, but so I kept that to myself. I certainly don't want to let anyone know that you got any weaknesses, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You certainly played that one close to your chest. So that makes the achievement even more notable. I mean, congrats on the result, mate. It was a hell of a drive from yourself and Brody to get P2 in the end. You led the opening laps, and it turned out to be a close shootout in the end with Brody chasing down Brock. What's your take on the race overall and the feeling a couple of days after, now you've had some time to think about it?
Yeah, I think you always go over and analyse your own performances. And, you know, for us, for all the co-drivers, it was a real unknown with this Gen 3 car, particularly with the tyre we were on and you know, the main driver. And Brody's great to be able to, you know, give me all that information, and I was able to then go out in my sessions and sort of do some longer race runs so I could get a really good feel for the tyre deg and the tyre management. And, you know, in our first P2, which was a co-driver one, did 17 laps straight, pretty much figured out exactly what I needed to do to make the tyre last and where I needed to position the car. And probably, I think, in the race, the first stint for me, I didn't really get to show I'd had a lot of lollies left in my lolly bag and I didn't get to show it towards the end of that stint because it was cut short from that that safety car. So I think you know, I had a few friends at home saying, oh, we thought you would have, you know, pushed on a little bit more, but I didn't really get to show what I had left in that stint. But I did in the second stint. I saved my tires well and sort of was able to, after having a double stack, then come back from being, I think we were as low as 11 or even lower, to be back in P4. So I just wanted more laps to be able to chase the other guys down, to be honest with you, and sort of really put ourselves back in it. But look, Bush did, you know, mega stints and what obviously we sort of expected he would do, and chase down Will, and obviously, you know, definitely kept Brock on his toes, that's for sure.
Dave, this is your third enduro campaign with Erebus, and now they're the team to beat. They're leading the team's championship. What has that progression been like within the team? Has there been a change, or is it just a matter of that everything sort of clicked this year? Is there anything that you've been able to see?
Oh, look, I think they're really well prepared for Gen 3. Like, you know, I remember at Bathurst, and this was well down the road you know, for building cars and all that, that stage. They were so excited about it, but they knew exactly, they had a plan on how they were building the cars, and they knew exactly at that stage, other than being able to have parts availability, they were excited about the car and then what the prospects were of building that, and understanding that, that, you know, all the team knew what they wanted out of the car and how they wanted to assemble it. And I think when they rolled out, you know, in you know, the start of this year, it's sort of all of those things that they wanted to put together. And, you know, essentially they are putting the set together that they're given, and they're doing a great job.
Mark mentioned the Bathurst warm-up at the start, and it was great, I think, from everyone to have the Sandown 500 back. It's a race we all love. How important was it from you, for you though, and for the team, to get their eye in something that is so brand new in terms of this package we're running this year before the big one in a couple of weeks' time?
Yeah, look, I haven't had a lot of time in the Gen 3 car other than a few, like had some rides in Sydney. And then I got to the test day, and you go to Winton, and that's a totally different track. So there was these little things that the Gen 3 car is very different. And I'd say I speak on behalf of other co-drivers that have been doing it for a while. You jump in the old Gen car and it would seriously not take you long after not being in the car for, let's say, 12 months to then sort of roll into test days, for example, and you'd be sort of pretty much straight on the pace that you needed to be. Mm. And you just got to think about it a little bit more with the Gen 3 car. You got to, you know, there's a couple little differences that you need to get used to. And technique differences. So for me, I really worked on that at the test day before Sandown, and that definitely helped me. We could sort of roll out, and you know, I wasn't worried about how I needed to drive the car. I was then, you know, more focused on what I needed to do to keep the tire alive, being that super soft, and get the most out of my stints. That's for sure.
Tell us about Brody. You know, we don't really know a whole lot, I don't think. We sort of see him as a bit of a racer's racer, but what's he like behind the curtain?
Look, you know, Bush is a great guy. He's incredibly focused. By far the best guy technically that I've worked with. He understands these cars inside and out. He has, you know, had his hands on every nut and bolt as well. So he... you know, he gets involved in all of this, and you know, I'm not saying as a negative to some other drivers that I've worked with, or from what I can see, a lot of guys, you know, roll in, have their team kit on, they do their job as a driver, which they all of them, you know, obviously doing a fantastic job, but there's some that actually care more technically about things, and he's definitely one of them. He's, you know, the best I've seen when it comes to that in understanding the car and what he needs out of it, and understanding ultimately what he needs to do and what he needs from the car to go fast, and he definitely, he's doing that at the moment, that's for sure.
How did your pit stops go? Some people battle to get in and out of those things because it's such a narrow little aperture there in those Camaros. How did you guys go from a pit stop point of view?
Yeah, I think everyone has to work out, obviously, the shape and what you need to do. For me, my process is before I hop out, I turn and look at the driver's mirror. While I'm doing that, I'm pretty much sinking my neck and almost I look to the driver's mirror. I put my head on my chin on my chest, and I get out in a, you know, crumpled out sort of try and do that in a ball as much as I can. And I'm not a huge bloke. So, you know, everyone's got their own way to get in and out of the cars. But the trouble is with the helmet, and, you know, I make that shape here, but you've got the air duct on the top. Literally, if you get in the wrong way, you almost get your head stuck in this, you know, bar work and orifice that you're trying to move your head around. You're like, oh shit, I'm stuck. so it's quite, once you work out where you need to, but you can't go in and just be lackluster about where you place it. You literally need to, you know, be, you know, when I get in, I'm basically aiming to get my chin to the gear stick, and then I go backwards into the seat. So there's a lot of processes now.
Now, heading to the mountain this year, 20 years since your debut there, 2003, it's been a hell of a journey, you know, and even you look back 2019, you missed out on a drive, and you come back here 2023 and you're with the championship leader in a car that is a red hot, one of the favourites for the race. Talk about that journey.
Yeah, it's certainly been a journey, I tell you. I remember doing my first race with Jose Fernandez, and we still catch up and see each other, so we're still good friends. But, man, it was just the privateer of privateers turning up, you know, young fella that, for me, like, I was doing chance of a lifetime, and I couldn't afford to even get involved in supercars at that stage, and won the competition, you know, got a funded drive in a car that was, you know, hopefully everything was going to stick together on it. And we got some reasonable results and got the attention of the guy that was running the car with Jose. And yeah, and then to sort of go through different teams, and it hasn't been, it certainly hasn't been easy from, you know, supercars. There was a real closed shop there for many, many, many years with different teams and co-drivers. So it was really hard to sort of get your seat embedded there. Not that you could be, you know, I remember when I drove with Webby, like, co-driver session, I was like P3, Mark Scaife was in front of me. And so I can't remember being, you know, fast or you're out of the window back then when you start, but it's all about the opportunity with the teams. And you know, for me, it's just been a journey of being in the, trying to be with the right team and the performance at the same time as well. Had a lot of great friends and teammates and teams I've been a part of, but you know, to be at this position with a team that's so strong at the moment, it's really exciting, that's for sure.
There's five drivers, I think, off the top of my head in Carrera Cup doing double duty this year. Alex wasn't running Carrera Cup on the weekend, Davison, but he's there and will be back for Bathurst. Your Erebus teammate, Jack Perkins, is running Super 2, as are a couple of others. How important these days is that regular mileage, is keeping in a category that is fiercely competitive, that's got that level of intensity, so that when you do roll into the main game, you're as sharp as you can be?
Yeah, I think it's really important. And look, I kicked off the season, you know, doing Bathurst 12-hour race. And it sort of rolls in. We've got all these Bathurst early in the year, got the 6-hour race. So, you know, for me, it's really cool that I'm getting opportunities where the phone keeps ringing from guys in GT racing or production cars, because I know I love doing that race as well. So, but then to have the regular battles and be in a, you know, Carrera Cup, you only got to have like a start where it doesn't go as well. You know, you can't just have an average one. You got to have a good one, otherwise you're going to lose the position.
Mm.
Or the guy in front has an average one, you get a mega one and you got a position there. So to be, you know, to be in a series like that means that you have to be doing everything at the best level, the best you can be, car setup wise, tire pressure wise, what you're doing as a driver. And look, you know, even on the track, one little move that you know, go left instead of right or something like that, or someone has a dive and it doesn't, you can lose like 3 or 4 spots out of it. And you know, that's where you got to play your cards right. And look, the enduros, I think a lot of the guys, you know, going to the main race in the 500, a lot of them, you know, were playing it pretty smart. And and look, so they should have been too, like in car pace and tire deg and all that, everyone was still battling. But yeah, for me, it didn't seem like there was any, you know, too much crazy stuff going on, that's for sure. But yeah, super important. You know, you got to be, these days, you can't just rock up and be underdone. I feel I've had a, you know, although we missed a round at Tail and Bend, where we sort of had to sit out after the damage from Townsville. Yeah, like I sort of felt like sort of straight back into it. And, you know, ready for Bathurst. And I'm really keen to get in the EBM Porsche and sort of get back there at the mountain in Carrera Cup, because we sort of missed a good quali there last year.
Yeah.
It wasn't a great session where you were able to just go out and have a mega crack. So, yeah, certainly looking forward to it this year.
And those things are doing fives at Bathurst now, which seems amazing for a cup car when 5 years ago we were doing eights for pole. Just on briefly on the Carrera Cup thing, you've had the opportunity to be a teammate to young Callum Hedge this year, and he's got the junior nod to go to the shootout. What do you make of young Callum? Because he's a strange little cat outside the car. He's very, very, very cool and calm, and quite a quirky Kiwi sense of humour, but clearly very good behind the wheel. what do you make of young Callum and his international prospects?
Yeah, look, he's a talent for sure. Like he's mega fast. Like he definitely has a crack. There's no doubt about that. And look, he's putting it all together. He might have had a couple of little things during the season that you know may not have gone his way. Like obviously on Sunday he didn't get a great start, and then all of a sudden he's getting tagged by and turned around. You know, so a little mistake and then a sniff from someone else where they're, you know, a bit optimistic, having a crack at, and all of a sudden that changed his round, you know, so you live and learn with that. But, you know, he's doing great. He's doing a great job over in the US. And he's obviously doing a great job in Carrera Cup. So he's having a really good year going to the shootout as well. And the whole team at EBM is really excited for him there. So he'll do that team proud, and he'll do Carrera Cup Australia proud and the team New Zealand as well. So, yeah. He's quirky dude. Like he's, you know, we had some fierce battles last year, and I think, there's a couple of things when I joined the team, but you know, we share cars to and from the airport and all that. And it's all good. He's a good young kid. And, look, who knows what the future holds for him? Cause at the moment there's a massive crossroads on potentially how much racing, where does he go? And if he wins his scholarship series or even in Carrera Cup as well. So yeah, really exciting prospect.
Your weekend in the Porsche, solid weekend until you sort of got stitched up in that first quarter mess in the final race.
Yeah, I certainly didn't feel like getting crashed into the door with all of that. So I took the long road didn't really have a mark on the car for the weekend. But we had a little drama in the second race where I got an average start, and we did an extra warm-up lap. And, you know, you get different times, and it's certainly not a maintenance issue or something like that. I might have pre-warmed the clutch and done a extra launch too many on the when I went up to the line, and I had the clutch in when I picked up the throttle. I started to get some creep, so instead of putting my foot on the brake and all that, I actually got straight off the throttle, and I sort of had to do a traffic light start. Lights went out, I gassed it, and you know, off I went. So I got an average start, not a good one, and I lost a position to Woody. And yeah, pretty much had, you know, sat behind him for the whole race. Although I sort of thought at a few times we were there to probably have a bit of a crack. He just positioned the car so well, I wasn't able to sort of capitalize on anything.
Last one, Bathurst next. I think Sandown was a pretty good debut for Gen 3 in Enduro mode. Only two DNFs, which I think was one of the biggest surprises of them all. Just how's this going to play out, mate? Or is the appeal of this that we really don't know this unpredictable great race this year?
It's definitely going to be unpredictable, I think. We're already talking about it. Like, we're going there with a soft tyre, with the car that has less downforce, more torque. We never had to, like, my stints last year, we didn't manage tyres a lot. We didn't have to. You were in your stint as you were getting lighter and you were degging the tire, it just got better. Like, you know, you were carrying less weight. You're going to get tire degradation this year in the race, in your stints, you know, middle of the day, obviously we're starting. So the track temperature will be up straight away at the start, full tanks. You'll see guys at the tail end of their stint, which you haven't seen, you know, sliding around a little bit over the top, you know, sliding if you lock the rears a little bit, that adds to it all. So it's definitely going to make the race a bit more difficult. I think the aero sort of calmed, you know, having good aero in the last gen car really calmed them down. Like, they're so good to, you know, the last year's car was just, you know, so good to drive over the top, so fast. Like, I did a 4.2 in the co-driver session. You're like, man, that's, you know, that's moving in those things. And I'm not sure what the lap time will hold. I know that all of the main drivers that'll be qualifying will be doing their absolute best to go as fast as they can. They'll be fast down the chute, but I think what you'll see is the cars moving around a lot more, and a lot more in the stint where there's a period where the deg and the time loss during that phase, you may not see the tyres recover as the fuel comes out of it at the same time.
Last one from me, Dave. How much do you miss a good Bathurst road trip?
I knew you were going to say something about this. If you didn't, I was. Yeah. Mate, how good were they? We shared some awesome road trips. I remember you begging us not to jump that that bluebird over the.
It wasn't our, it was a really good
train track, and gets there. This would be great. And you're like, no, do not do that.
It wasn't our bluebird to saw in half.
Oh, usually the boys just bought the, remember they'd just buy the different cars or
Figaro.
Yeah, yeah.
I spent a lot of time in that Figaro. That was a thing.
Mate, we had some cool trips and lots of funny conversations, that's for sure.
And the disappointing thing is that we had to go race Nissans at the weekend when we got there.
You know what though? Out of everything, you always learn something. Like I was only laughing with the other guys. We're talking about the defense mechanisms of knowing that if you had a car follow you out of Forest Elbow, you knew that you were going to get done and passed. So what you would do is basically come up out of the cutting in that section there and you just sort of stall them back a little bit. You'd go like shit over the top and down the hill as fast as you could go, get a 3-car length gap on them, and then that meant that you didn't get past that lap. Safety car was just like the worst. So then you drop the train and then just gas it so that you got an air gap to catch the cars in front. So, man, there's strategies everywhere to keep yourself out of trouble.
Nice. So
I've implemented all of those, let me tell you.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah. Nice work. Well, I was waiting for Mark to ask that question right at the very end. Nice work. Congratulations on the podium. Awesome job. A fourth and a third over the last couple of years at Bathurst as well. So I'm sure another big result is in the offing. Great to have you on the program, D-Russ. Thank you very much. And all the best for the big one in a couple of weeks' time.
Great. Thanks, guys. Thanks for the chat.
There's David Russell joining us here on The Grid.
This is On The Grid on mypodcasthouse.com.
Right, you're listening to On The Grid, wherever you get your favourite podcast from. Thanks for listening. Make sure you click that subscribe button. I only tell you this because Shebeki never does, Mark. You've got to give the subscriber plug at some point in the show, but he's away, so we can do what he was. Still no news, Mark, as to whether he's gone and bought another rubbish racehorse.
He's probably got another six up his sleeve. Well, so does this mean that you're Tony Shebeki, I'm Richard Crail, and our next guest is Mark Walker?
Well, I don't know if there's any winners out of that equation. Regardless, we'll bring in our special guest host for the last half of the show. You know his dulcet tones from the pit lane of supercar events, among many, many other things. And as we record, this is actually spend his day at the G, so maybe he's Tony Shebeki. Chad Nailon is on the show. Hello, mate.
I go as Tony Shebeki Jr. from now on.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah, that's my new title. So that technically makes me Watermelon Boy, actually.
Oh, it does, yeah. Actually. Just not quite as famous as the real one.
Maybe I should just be eating a whole watermelon while we do this.
Good podcast, that is.
Yeah.
how are you, mate? How was your Sandown 500?
It was really good, really good. It was cool to be back in the lane for an enduro again. Obviously, I hadn't done one since Bathurst, and you sort of forget. I know it sounds really obvious. You forget how different an enduro is going to be in pit lane until you get into it. It's like, oh man, hang on, I'm behind the eight ball here in practice one. I've got to start really getting my head in the game. You think you're across everything, and then you start seeing it all unfold, and you realize that there's lots to learn before Sunday. And then throwing in the 86s and Dunlop series, bit of Porsche in the lane, and I had a very nice weekend. 25 minutes from home.
So in the pit lane, there was a lot of talk before the event that the brake changes were going to be a drama. We were going to have dramas getting drivers in and out of these cars. What did you see firsthand? Were there any sort of things that stood out to you that were an issue that could rear its head again in Bathurst?
I certainly didn't see a lot of brake changes going on, that's for sure. It was this big talking point, and they all practiced them all through the Winton and QR test days and all through the practice sessions, they were practicing them, and then I think I saw like one team do it, and they nailed it. I think it was Groves on the Payne car. They absolutely nailed that brake change, but none of the teams that were sort of on the podium spots went for it in the end. So Didn't get much of a read. Driver changes looked okay. They had it honed down. I think if you ask the drivers, there's probably a few sore bruises and things like that from getting in and out, but we didn't see anyone really getting delayed. A couple cars a bit slow to drive off once they landed. Usual sort of stuff. A couple tyres getting mixed up. I think maybe Team 18 got a couple of tyres mixed up in the course of the race on the Scott Pye car, but it was all just, you know, the usual chaos when like a car driving down pit lane without a rear wing. How on earth did that happen? And then all of a sudden they're cutting parts off Chas Mostert's car and no one knows what's going on there. It's just the usual enduro surprises that somehow happen all at once.
Well, we need to talk about the whole Cam Waters, Garth Tander thing because, okay, so Garth Tander loses the wheel and they think it was the wheel nuts and they've been a Gen 3 issue and that clearly cost a very competitive Mustang a shot at the race and that was massively disappointing, I think, for the show because Garth had driven that car very well to that point and was comfortably as quick as anyone else. And we know that Dave was going to do a good job. So clearly they were in the mix. But like, I mean, it's just the most Tickford Racing thing that could ever happen, that the one car that could be in the way of an errant wheel bouncing down towards Dandenong Road would be the other best Ford in the race in terms of Cam Waters and James Moffat. It just, it's the most unlucky thing that could happen.
Yeah, I just, what did they say? A one in a million?
Yeah.
Could be even more than that. Like, you know, wretched bad luck, wasn't it? And Moff, even when I interviewed him, said that he had no idea where it came from. Never saw it. Just heard this whack. What was that? And then there was some conjecture over whether or not they did the pit stop and left. And even at that point, no one really knew that the thing was missing a wing. But it would have made sense because nothing they could do about it at the time. It was like they didn't just have one sitting there. So actually, Tickford did a really good job dealing with it. But that car didn't lose a lap in the process of that happening. Unfortunately, it was wounded beyond a point of it being relatively fast anymore. And it also really skewed the final results. So you go, okay, well, it was an all-Camaro podium, but we never really knew where those two cars would end up had they one not taken the other out. Because there's a pretty good chance that they would have been up there with the Erebus cars, particularly after Brody stacked, which, again, the stack wouldn't happen if that accident had happened. But still, I reckon one of them, if not both, could have been on the podium, particularly that Grove car. That thing looked pretty quick. They were both, what, 1-2 in the warm-up? Okay, it's a warm-up. But the if the Matt Payne and Estra car finished sixth, you get the feeling that, all due respect to them, Garth and Reynolds were going to be a bit further up the road.
On that, Kevin Estra, where did he come from? Like, we don't France. See... Well, yes.
Via Roger Penske and Porsche.
we don't see imports to Australia come and drive these things as well as he did. That was amazing.
Yeah, and they did a really good job coaching him through the race. I was cued onto Car19's radio for that one. And just the whole way through, just even particular corners, just, okay, mate, a little less wheel spin out of that one. You know, just the whole way through. And he was... throughout the course of his double stint or triple stint, whatever it ended up being, they were giving him less and less info because he was nailing it. And in the end, they were just telling him what a good job he was doing because he was.
Yeah, I have loved his addition to the grid from the moment that Stephen Grove announced it. And it's one of the things that I think Grove Racing bring to supercars since they've got involved in that team is a willingness to think outside the box a little bit with that kind of thing. And and honestly, you could probably throw the Stanaway signing into that sort of group as well, because don't know how many people quite expected that. But they wanted Matt Campbell for that car. He was busy. So they went, well, who in our world that we know really well, which is Porsche Racing, can we tap into? Let's get a guy that's won Le Mans in his class, that's a factory driver in the 963 hypercar, that's raced at the Bathurst 12-hour, which is probably the big tick box to tick there because he's got relevant Bathurst experience in a car that's slightly quicker than a supercar. Like, it was just a lot of boxes to tick from just a guy who's a very, very good racing car driver. But I'm looking forward to Bathurst, and it strikes me that he could be... Remember when we all saw Mattias Ekström way back in the day and with Andy Prio in that car, and we went, oh, my God, where have these guys been all our life? I kind of get the feeling that if the Matt Payne, Kevin Estra car makes the shootout, it could be Kevin doing the job. It would not shock me at all if that was the outcome at Mount Panorama.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Matt's quick and they love him there and they'd want him to get the experience.
Yeah, but, of course.
Yeah. You know what's funny? Like, it made me wonder the other day. I was like, I wonder how Jules Gounon would go.
Oh, mate. Hey, why he hasn't been signed yet. I mean, he probably clashes with the 40 sports car races he does.
Yeah.
But He's the best international I've ever seen at Bathurst.
Yeah. Give the guy a ring. Whatever the plus whatever number it is for Andorra, just look it up, buzz him, get him here.
I've got him on speed dial to get right onto that.
I'm going to Google what is the code for Andorra.
I got a telemarketer from there the other day, so I'll let you know.
Want to take a punt? It's three digits. There you go. That's how big it is.
Yeah, I saw an Andorra number plate in the Hockenheim pit, so it might have been his car, actually.
Here's a fun fact. It's one number less than the number for Monaco.
Oh, yeah?
Yep. So Monaco is plus 377, Andorra plus 376.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yep. That's fun stats.
You're right. Yeah. And I think the rest of the number is, so to be plus 376, win with Jules, I think would be the...
Exactly. Go for Jules.
Go for Jules. Well, we'll put that on our wish list for next year after he's won probably a fourth Bathurst 12-hour. Assuming he's back, of course, because I wouldn't know if he's entered or not.
No, of course not.
No, we have actually announced that Kenny's running, and why wouldn't you re-sign that Jill Gunnon's going to be your co-driver? What else stood out from the weekend, boys? That we touched on it at the end with David Russell at the top of the show, that there were predictions of doom with Gen 3, as there has been all year. Some of them have been warranted, some not, but we got 358 laps without many mechanical dramas, really, did we? Only two DNFs. One of them was Garth Tander's wheel falling off. So no remarkable dramas caused by steering rack failures at the top of turn six or things like that. Are we surprised? Did we expect this was going to be the way? What's the vibe around that?
Good question. I think it was like, you know, those races where we get into a weekend and we always talk about how high the deg's going to be and then it never really happens. It was a little bit like that. Like we all thought, oh, gee, this could be anything could happen here. I think the teams have been working on really trying to nail down the steering racks that they like and getting them the way they like within what's, you know, the realms of possibilities. Erebus was certainly working very hard on that. And despite smashing the curbs that much, they seem to get through it. Weirdly, it was the only real curb damage I heard all weekend was a radiator getting busted.
Mm.
And that was about it. So pretty good. I know.
Was that the ski jump though at turn two, three?
They reckon that, well, that was car, so it was car 88 and it was the seam on the left-hand side of the radiator. And I think from hitting the curbs, it was sort of twisting the chassis and with the rigidity, enough to find the weakest point, which happened to be, you know, the welds on the radiator. So that was, I don't think we'll be seeing much of that at Bathurst, for example, because you know, different kinds of load. So good signs for Bathurst, I think, in terms of reliability. I think car 55 had a power steering belt or something like that. But I mean, the old gen cars seem to have more power steering issues than these ones. So I think in that respect, it was pretty good. Bring on Bathurst for doubling the distance, taking out the curbs, obviously higher loads across the top. Different tire, so you know you're not going to get quite as much of that load on a soft, not a super soft. So be interesting to see how it plays out, but I think it's a good sign.
So three rounds left in the championship. Of course, we had the great finish in the weekend between Coke and Red Bull, as it's seemingly been all year. And there's only 100 points, less than 100 points between those two squads in the top of the teams championship. And then third in the teams championships, the leading Brad Jones combination, which is
a 1,000 points away. But literally 1,000 points away.
But then you look at the drivers' championship. If Shane wasn't disqualified from that season opener, he'd be leading the title by 13 points right now.
Right. Don't tell him that.
Okay.
I don't know.
But like there's all this talk that he's given up and he's checked out. He has not. He's still in this.
Yeah, when he's motivated and he's in like he was on Sunday, clearly there, isn't he? You know, let's hope that we get through Bathurst with all four of them still in contention. You know, and then we're off to the Gold Coast and that's, you know, anyone's guess there with four races to go, two tough street circuits, it'd be pretty good story to hopefully get what we'd give for another Newcastle-esque finish to this series, you know, in Adelaide. They come around, I feel like once every, you know, 5 years, you might get that grandstand finish. And if it is trending that way, isn't it, this year? I know there's a bit of a gap there for now, but I wish no ill on Brody, but those gaps can change very quickly.
Yeah, and Bathurst, it feels like he's going to dictate. And you mentioned Surfers in Adelaide, which are wild card rounds. Let's be honest; they are two tracks where anything can go wrong, anything can happen, and completely swing the whole championship. But Bathurst is still the race, I think, that is going to define this title fight and whether we get that finish. So let's say it's one of those crazy Bathursts and we do get a wild race and a surprise winner. But let's say Brody finishes third, Shane finishes fifth, then yes, I think we will get that title showdown, no doubt. Yeah. But if Shane wins and gets the 300 points and Brody's a DNF because the thing breaks a steering racket, the metal grate halfway through the race, then you'd consider it difficult for Shane to lose the championship from there. Not impossible by any extent, especially this year and especially given the pace of those Coke cars. But it just feels like this race this year, with all the unpredictability around it, is going to be more critical to the championship than it's been for a long time.
Yeah, it was funny. We all, like, the same with Sandown, right? It was like, ooh, 300-point swing. Yeah. And we all left Sandown going, right, that was exactly as we came in almost. Like,
well, it worked perfectly because the guy third in the championship scored the most points. The guy second in the championship scored the third most points. And the guy leading the championship scored the second most points. So it just had the net effect of closing everyone up, which is perfect.
Yeah. Excellent. So, and it could work the opposite way, couldn't it? Brody could win Bathurst and the others have a shocker and it's like game over.
Yeah. Totally. No pressure, D-Russ.
Yeah, right.
So Sandown 500 on the weekend, the crowd was big. Like, that was the sort of crowd that we haven't seen there in probably a decade. Was it that the fact that the race wasn't on free-to-air? Was it the weather was ace? Was it that it wasn't up against any local footy finals? It was good. What was the secret sauce that did that? Because we mentioned last week, the promotion for the event was really good. Like, it was hitting all the right places. It was hitting us. And we're the sort of people who would be interested in that event. And come race day, there were a lot of people there.
It was clearly a pretty good spend on it. I remember talking to a few of the brass at Supercars on the Tuesday or Wednesday, I think it was. And they were all saying at that point it was trending big. Ticket sales were up much higher to that point coming into it from last year. So all signs were pointing to it being big very quick. The weather forecast certainly helped.
Oh, didn't it?
But you couldn't have picked. Yeah, like you would never dream of it. I think we said on air at one point, four seasons in one day, and we got one season for 4 days across. That's just like completely unheard of for where we were in the world. I mean, look what happened 7 days prior to it. You know, it was freezing. would we have had that sort of crowd with that sort of weather? Don't know. But having the 500 back resonates with people here in the middle of September. It's just you put the same old thing on in the same old time slot, and it just clicks with people like it's habitual.
It just needed that sprint races on the Saturday arvo, I reckon.
Ah, oh, this
I,
is
I get the feeling we'll, here, but... I get the feeling we'll come to this in Hot or Not, won't we? So let's just sit
you read
on that.
My mind.
The one thing I will say about the weekend, and it was well promoted. I thought it was really well organized, barring a few little caveats, which we'll also come to in the Hots or Nots. I do think that next year, pending its confirmation, which we all expect now that Singapore's probably not going to happen, they have to do retro round next year for the 50th Sandown 500.
Agreed.
I remember that first retro round they did was just such a cool event. Really great vibe. It wasn't a 500, but people fully embraced the whole thing. But I think given the uncertainty around that venue, that could be the last Sandown 500, the 50th anniversary of one of the great races, they've got to go the retro theme. Everyone runs a livery, do the gear, get people to dress up, the whole gamut of stuff around it. It would just make it the perfect event. And I would suggest that if they did that, on top of everything they did to promote it this year, it wouldn't matter if it's a 10-degree September Melbourne day with sleet. You'd still get a similar sort of turnout because of the whole feeling and vibe around it. That would be my only thought for next year in the planning, is just throw that other element into it, make it as big as it possibly can be if it is indeed one of the last 500s that we get at that venue.
Yeah, you'd hope so, right? I wonder if the raging success that Indigenous Round has been has maybe taken a bit of the shift away from retro round, and the teams put so much time and commercial effort and cost into making the Indigenous round what it is, which has been awesome. So can both exist? Probably. I hope so.
Maybe there's perhaps there's a way to do it without the liveries, without that cost. I don't know, but maybe there's a more of a fan focused thing. Is, you know, the best dress up kind of gear, or, you know, theme your merch around it, or things like that. I don't know, but I do know that talking to the guys at the GRM merch back in the day with those retro rounds. Remember they had the orange, you know, the Tirana, GRM Tirana livery, and the classic liveries on their car. They sold, the only event they sold more merch at that year was Bathurst.
Right.
So the retro gear flew off the shelves. So maybe
surely it cleans its own face. It washes its own face, right? You'd have to say.
Yeah.
Now, okay, I'm not in the commercial department of any supercars team, and I understand there's a pretty big cost in doing that very thing, but like, you just need to look at how successful Jack Perkins did his retro thing in the Dunlop Series on the weekend. He got the sign off from Shore and Partners, the sponsor, to do it. He got Castrol on board to help fund the whole thing as well.
Yep.
If you printed 1,000 t-shirts and 1,000 model cars and 1,000 hats, they would have walked out the door before race day.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Agreed.
Stepping away from the supercar side of things at Sandown, Chad, one up your alley, Toyota 86s this season. I'll go early with the mega hot. The racing, even in the scholarship series, has been incredible.
Hasn't it been great? I feel like in the addition of the scholarship series has really helped to bring the best out of the 86 series, because it's separated a bit of the looseness out, so that you can go away at a state level and make your mistakes and it not be on live TV on a national motor racing level where you're holding up an entire race meeting with an accident happening, all that sort of stuff. So the scholarship series has played a huge part in the level of driving that we've seen in the 86s this year. We had one safety car on the weekend. It was a really unlucky one. You know, kids run off the road and then the things quit on him when he came back on. And it caused the untimely end of race three. I think we've had one safety car at each event. So one safety car in three races for a series full of teenagers is pretty good, given the racing that they're throwing out as well.
Mark, I'll give you a little look behind the curtain here. I was standing behind our colleague here while he was calling that race with Andy Jones on Sunday, and that safety car came out and he collapsed onto the desk in despair, because he'd spent eight laps selling this finish that was absolutely going to happen. There was no doubt it was going to be an amazing race to the flag. And then the safety car came out and you could feel all the air sucked out of the commentary box. I felt your pain, mate. I really did.
Yeah. It would be no different to watching a Moto 3 race that has built and built and built with that lead pack. And you're going, here we go. The next 4 minutes is going to be gloves off brilliance. And then them just being like, and that's the end. Goodbye.
Yeah.
I
still can't figure out the logistics behind Clay Richard saving that one in the opening race.
Yeah. So he ran over something in the front straight and hurt it. And that's what cut the tire. And then he's got around to the, you know, I think he had one moment at turn six, but by the time he got around a whole other lap, it completely delaminated. And that was some pretty serious car control to gather that thing up. That thing properly launched off the curb. Yeah. It'd be a hell of a photo if anyone got that for him, even just a still shot out of the coverage.
I'm sure someone did. No, it was terrific. In fact, the whole support card was mega. I'm sure the rest of it will be discussed in our hots and knots. So our breakdown of the week that was in the world of motorsport, it's pretty simple. It's either hot or it's not, one of the two. We're going to start with the hots because we like starting on the high, and then we save the serious stuff to the end to leave people with a lasting impact, Chad. That's what we think anyway. So let's start with some hots. And you're our guest this week. Please, we would like you to go first.
Well, I'm only doing this because someone else will say it. So I need to get in early on this one. Liam Lawson.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, just first points, out qualifying Max, kicking Max out of Q3 in the Alpha Lemon. Like, amazing. Just sign him.
Alpha Lemon.
give him a contract for next year now before someone else does, because he's made of the right stuff. And it's so conflicting, isn't it, watching him replace Daniel Ricciardo, who we all love, with another kid we all love. It's like sibling rivalry almost. I just don't know how to handle it internally when you're watching Liam do this in what is essentially now Daniel's seat. So hopefully we get somehow what we all want, which is Oscar Daniel Liam, all full time next year. But he's red hot, white hot.
Any more hots?
Any more hots? I'll throw Ryan Wood in the hot list. He nearly ended in the naughty list on Sunday. He did his best to get there as well, but hey, he walked away with the big trophy at the end of the day, and he continues to, as Murph so eloquently put it, make statements. Sometimes winning a trophy in Super 2 or Super 3 isn't about actually walking away with the championship. It's about making a statement. And I feel like Cam McLeod's made plenty of those without getting probably the silverware he deserves. And I feel like Ryan Wood is, well, it's just proven why he got promoted after three supercar drives.
Can we just broadly hot that second Super 2 race?
Oh, mate.
Please.
Can we? That was so much fun to call. I didn't like seeing what happened to Aaron Love, and I'm glad that car stayed out of harm's way.
Yeah.
But man, that sequence of events was incredible.
That was the best supercar racing full stop of the year so far.
Yeah. They find a way every time on hard tires. You could put them on concrete blocks that Fred Flintstone ran around on. Yep. And they would still find a way to make that racing incredibly exciting. Dunlop Series is at a MotoGP level where MotoGP was 3 to 4 years ago, where it was unmissable. Like you genuinely couldn't miss a race through genuine fear of FOMO.
Yep.
And that's where Super 2 is at the moment. It's just a straight up watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. Nice. They're your hots done.
Yep. I think they're the two I'll go for. No, I'll also throw in Bun Bun Bakery on Springvale Road because I tell you what, that time.
That is delivers. one of the gems of the local Dandenong cuisine.
Yeah.
A Bun Bun Bar Me is right up there with the very best you can have. In fact, 2 out of 3 days at the Speed Series round, that was the broadcast team's lunch. So
I apologize for the third day.
That was it. Couldn't have been as good. Great. No, yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't anywhere near as good. No, well, that's the kind of hot we're after on this little podcast.
Especially with the extra chili.
Oh, you got to have the chili.
Very hot.
You got to have the chili, definitely. I'd like to nominate the Singapore Grand Prix as a hot.
Yeah.
For a whole raft of different reasons. And the Singapore Grand Prix was one of those races that you needed to see the whole race to get the full effect of it. You couldn't just come in, I don't think, with 10 laps to go and get everything that went into getting to that point. The Singapore Grand Prix was like one of those test matches that goes down to day 5 and everyone's up around the wicket. All the fielders are in and your team's 9 down and they need 5 runs to win. And everyone's up on the wicket and the tension is like nothing you can believe. But at some point in that test match, you know that there were 20 overs of someone bowling slow to middling spin on a dead track to someone who was blocking them and nothing happened for hours.
Yeah.
But you get through that lull and it builds to an incredible climax. And that's what happened at the Singapore Grand Prix. That was a really, really good race. Really good race. And it shows what Formula One can be when there's not one dominant team streaking away from everybody and smoking, or one dominant driver for that matter, smoking everyone like Max Verstappen did, Mark.
Oh, well, I must have texted you boring just at the end of that 20-over stint.
You did, exactly. And then you clearly went to bed and missed it.
I suffered the because I was obviously pretty knackered from hand down, but I did a pretty good job of getting through most of it.
Yeah.
But then for the last 10 laps that you mentioned, I nodded off for every second lap.
Oh, no.
And so I would keep waking up and being like, what the hell just happened?
Yes, and then, yes, exactly.
And then a lap later, waking up and being like,
George Russell crashed.
It was genuinely like that. I was like, oh, here come the Mercs.
Mm.
And then I wake up and be like, oh, Carlos is still winning.
Yeah.
And then I wake up and be like, George is in the fence.
Yeah.
I was like, what the hell is going on?
No, it was tremendous. Really enjoyed it. And full smarts to Carlos for basically doing a better job at Ferrari strategy than Ferrari have for a very long time. And backing himself up to Lando so he could get some DRS to cover off the two Mercs. That is genius stuff. So Max is going to win Suzuka by 25 seconds this weekend, but nevertheless, we got one good Grand Prix and the Red Bull streak is over.
We don't have to stay up to midnight.
No, we don't. We can suffer through a boring Grand Prix at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which is just great.
Go straight into MotoGP.
Absolutely. Where are they this
week? It's the other way around this week, which is very unusual.
Oh, nice.
No, they're in India if they all get a visa to get into the country.
It sounds like a big if at the moment.
Yeah, apparently
the snakes.
Yeah, apparently the snake infestation there at the Buddha Circuit. So that's interesting. Awesome. Another quick share. Another quick hot to Callum Hedge, who wrapped up the Michelin Junior Championship scholarship announcement on the weekend. I really like Callum. Not only is he outrageously quick as a racing car driver and good in tin tops and open wheelers now, as it turns out, but he is a quirky individual. And I really like that because there's not enough of them in the sport. There's a lot of very straight-laced people in interviews. There are a lot of people who aren't very good in interviews. Callum is neither of those two things. He's a very entertaining chat, and he's just a little bit quirky and never change, mate, never change. And he's very, very fast. So I know the Earl Bamber team highly rate this young guy. His manager, Steve Horn, who's had a bit of industry experience over the years, was at Sandown on the weekend.
Cool to see him there, wasn't it? It was really cool to see Steve Horn show up at the racetrack.
He quietly sauntered into the Porsche lounge at one point, and one of the Porsche team asked me who the older guy was, and I was like, oh, how long have you got? And did a very quick CV, and eyes were open. So really cool to follow the progress of these young kids all the time. And Hedgie clearly very, very fast. I'd like to give a hot as well to Jackson Walls for remembering a phone number. It's a quirky thing to give a hot for, but when he broke down in race two on Saturday, he parked at the back of the horse racing track, jumped out of the car, yanked a mobile phone from one of the officials and rang the team, namely his dad, to explain what had gone on because his radio had failed after he drove out of pit lane. Mm. Now,
I have a bit of intel actually on that.
Well, just one thing on that. I have no idea what anyone's number is anymore. I type their name in and ring them from there. So good job, Hedgie, to remember his old boy's phone number. That's very impressive.
Yes. Well, you think he was ringing his dad.
Well, that's what that's the party line.
Yeah, yeah. Who in reality, it was +376 go for Jules. Right. That's what, no one realized it at the time, but it was actually, he was ringing Jules just to catch up.
So you reckon he's just, it parked nice Saturday afternoon at Sandown, sun shining. He's trapped on the horse racing track, couldn't get back till after the shootout, mind you. And so you just ring up old Jules for a bit of a chat in Andorra. Okay.
That's my theory anyway.
Okay. Yep. No, I like
Unconfirmed.
It.
Unconfirmed.
Apologies to the marshal then, who's now got a fairly expensive international call.
He heard all the numbers going on, all the beeping. Like, whoa, 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 hang on.
What is this? So they're my hots for this week. There were more, but we've already covered them off. I had Kevin Estra listed as a hot. I thought that was great. And the promotion of Sandown and the crowd that turned up was outstanding. The vibe at the start of that race. Went and watched the start up in the grandstand with an old colleague of ours, David Siegel, and and the sport still hasn't lost any of its impact when a supercar race starts. It is still one of the better sporting moments. Full grandstand, sun shining, supercar race start. It's a pretty cool, visceral experience.
I think Kevin ended up on the hot list of a few of the staff members at Supercars Media too.
Oh, really? Excellent.
Yeah. They rate him very highly.
Mm. No, he's a good performer. Mark.
Mm-hmm. Look, we're staunch advocates of fine dining here, whether it's the Springvale Bakery or Pizza Hut, but it was just great to see over the weekend the Crail cookie wheeled out.
Oh, yes. Good point.
Well done, Richard.
How did they taste? I didn't eat one. I couldn't do it.
Do you know what? I couldn't do it either.
Yeah. It just felt wrong.
It felt wrong. But I've never had so many people come up to me and tell me how delicious I was. Wow.
You're sweet enough.
Yeah. But apparently they were very delicious. And I, funnily enough, was tagged on Instagram by the cookie company in Melbourne that made them. So,
That's nice.
Yeah, there you go. No, yeah, that was a nice gesture.
Nice of Arnott's to reach out like that. That's fantastic.
Yes.
We could pick him up our next time to Sydney Motorsport Park.
Some hots from NASCAR land, and they do things a little bit different over there, the Bristol Night Race. Have you been to that, Chad?
I have indeed. While we're here, there you go. A little bit of memorable beer.
Jeff Gordon t-shirt.
Yeah, you like the shirt, by the way.
Yeah, it's very nice. And a photo of, and I've seen this, I've seen the original version of this photo.
Yes.
You look less hungover in the Simpsons cartoon version of that photo.
Now, hang on. I wasn't hungover. I wasn't hungover. I was drunk. Right. And there's a difference.
Asleep at the switch.
Yeah.
How... They have the intro music where all the drivers pick their own songs. I think there needs to be more of that in World Motorsport because that was a really nice touch. There's full lists of those online.
Yep.
Also there, Denny Hamlin, he wasn't a terribly popular winner. You know, back in the day, they used to hurl beer cans and stuff onto the circuit, but apparently in 2023, you throw a whole condom wrapped up in a condom onto the
cucumber.
Track.
The cucumber.
Cucumber.
Yes.
Yeah.
Maybe he's actually a cat and he's scared of cucumbers.
That's wow. And, you know, the winner on the Gold Coast gets a surfboard, but Denny won himself a dagger, a genuine dagger. So
I think we should be giving out more trophies and prizes that are actually useful things that can be used in everyday life. I think that's actually quite clever.
Tin cups are rubbish, aren't they?
Yeah, what do you do with them? I mean, you can drink out of them and eat nuggets out of them, but apart from that,
like you win Martinsville a couple of times and you've got a grandfather's clock for every room of your house. Like that's actually a useful prize.
Yep. They should just start doing just general things from, you know, like we should just, that should be a Bunnings thing that we do with supercars, right? Instead of getting a trophy, you get like a, you get some timber, get a new wheelbarrow.
Yep.
Something from the nursery would be nice.
Yep. Yeah. A voucher for $250 for plants. Like, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Your voucher.
You've just won Bathurst. Congratulations.
You got some extra credit on your Bunnings PowerPlay Power Pass card.
And it's the size of one of those ones that you get for getting pole from Armorall. Nice. That'd be great. I'm all for that. A pitchfork. Just something that, you know, useful.
Nice.
I liked what Denny, I was going to put Denny Hamlin on my hot list because did you hear what he said when they all booed him?
No.
So the whole crowd's booing him, boo, 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 because, you know, everyone hates Denny. And then, he's the new Kyle Busch, right? So he gets on the microphone afterwards and he goes, "I just beat your favorite driver," to the whole crowd. And then whoever's doing the interview goes, "Which one?" And he goes, "All of them." And then he walked off. And I was like, yes, why don't we get that here?
Yes.
In Australia, just someone tell them, like, That's Jimmy Richards' areas.
Yeah, that's crowd tremendous. Abuse. Very good.
Friend of the pod, Molly Taylor, she finished third in Extreme E on Saturday after the windscreen wipers failed, and then she had to drive completely blind, being guided by the engineer back in the command center.
Mm.
Like, that's a dictionary definition of having a bit on.
I reckon she wouldn't have lost any time as well.
No, she would have gone quicker.
Probably went faster, yeah.
Yeah. Irritatingly talented human being, Molly Taylor.
No doubt.
And on that, Matt Campbell, pole at the Brickyard, finished second in the IMSA race there. So another friend of the pod doing really good things overseas.
Like that.
Look, Liam Lawson, of course, the Carlos Lando bromance. That's another thing I love to see, isn't it? Fantastic.
How do I become a friend of the podcast, just out of curiosity?
Well, you are now.
You are now.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, the criteria are not strict.
Just wanted to know. Sorry, go on.
To Sandown, Andre Heimgartner's beard game, that's incredibly strong. Yeah. I think I could develop a bromance there. That was a really good beard.
He's like he's like a young Hank Scorpio.
Yeah, just Andre. And that's a good Simpsons reference. just Andre in general. Like P5 up to fifth in the championship. Like,
I know, right?
Literally best of the rest now.
BJR are going to have the third garage next year at this rate.
Yeah, that's so good.
How good. And Dale Wood, first top five since I think he finished fourth in 2017 or something like that for Erebus at Bathurst. So,
yeah, right.
Really cool to see him a good run. You know, the guy was heartbroken at Bathurst last year.
Yeah. Literal
tears. Cool. Mm. Yeah, good to see him get a good result because he's one of the lovable ones, is our Dale.
And finally for me, 2 weekends in a row, Big Bad Sandown, and I think it's going to lose its bad title because there really wasn't any massive shunts in 2 weekends, which is things you like to see.
True. Yeah. True. Just, I like it.
Just big Sandown.
Just big good Sandown.
Big good Sandown.
Dave, I couldn't sell that.
No, I don't think you could. All right, let's move on to the knots. Chad, what have you got that perhaps didn't quite ring your bell this weekend?
So Look, I get that it's the Gen 3 car and there would have been risk inherent in doing this, but I really missed the co-driver races on Saturday. I felt like the co-drivers in general, Garth Tander did one lap. He drove the car out in practice four for a driver change and that was it.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing? Let's get these guys out there and racing. The co-driver list is so good. Imagine how stacked that co-driver race would have been if we've done it. It would have been all time.
Like one of the co-drivers is the five-time Bathurst champion.
Yeah. And then another one is a four-time in Wake Up.
Yes, exactly. The greatest supercar driver of all time, statistically.
Yeah. Take it on Garth Tander. Take it on Moffat. Take it on Perkins, Russell. Like, it would have been all time, especially after what Erebus did. The way that grid would have been set, it would have been a very good race, I reckon, watching the Erebus boys slog it out and then having... And then Estre in the middle of it having his first ever start. Like, it just would have been really good. But I get it. Like, you know, new cars, costs, blah, blah, blah. Still, I just felt like Saturday needed a feature of some sort. Now, the other option I think could be, again, money, but to have a big Dunlop Series race there that is a feature like Xfinity takes the feature on a Saturday.
Like they used to, cool. They used to at Bathurst, which was always great fun. But maybe do that Bathurst thing at Sandown.
At Sandown, right? Mm. Like, I think that'd be kind of cool. I just, like, don't get me wrong, I love a shootout, but it just didn't feel like it was the feature on Saturday that that it is at Bathurst. You know, an arm roll shootout at Bathurst kicks ass.
Yeah.
And that is its own thing. But especially on such a 1 minute lap time, it was like, and here's the shootout and there's the shootout done.
Yeah.
It was really quick. So I just felt like Saturday needed to build to a bigger crescendo.
Yep. Yep.
Outside of it, did I have any more? I think I did, didn't I? Let me just go over what I was thinking here. Oh, yes. I was just thinking about supercars and not thinking about my poor old friends in dirt track racing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I like this for you.
Yeah, yeah. The Schmozzle that is Sydney Speedway is heartbreaking at best and infuriating at worst. Like, they, the government of New South Wales, took away a perfectly good speedway to replace it with a perfectly unfunctional speedway, and then still haven't done anything with the land that they've torn the old speedway down with, which has all gone very quiet. Now, I'm all for building a new speedway. I love the Motorplex. I lost Claremont. That was sad. We got the Motorplex. Hooray. But what they've gone and done with it and the level of failure there and the amount of work that it's going to take to get that back up is just... You know, it's huge, and it's taken a promoter with it. Somebody told me when they were building that speedway, the first promoter is going to lose money, the second promoter will fix it, and the third promoter will make the money.
Yeah,
and I just they were right.
Yep,
yeah. It's looking like that's probably going to be true if they can get everything fixed. Promoter number two. So, what a shame. You know, that's the home of sprint car racing, Sydney, and yeah, hopefully onwards and upwards if they can get the right people in there to fix it all up. It's just terrible.
Like this whole speedway in metro cities, it's just buggered. Like Brisbane lost Archerfield.
Yep.
Sydney's got the drama at the moment. Melbourne's got Avalon, which is in Geelong, and it's a bit of a garbage dump.
Adelaide has got $1 dim sims though, so you know, credit where credit's due.
No, well, they sold out of them by 3 o'clock the last time I went there, so no dim sims. Adelaide's got Murray Bridge, which is in Murray Bridge. And then you're left with Perth. You know, it's incredible that this sport that is actually able to sell tickets over the summer is in such a bad bind at the moment.
Yeah, I'm hoping it does what drag racing did and just it bottoms out to the point where it can't get any worse and then it rebounds.
Yeah.
And drag racing's going through a little purple patch at the moment, which warms my heart. So hopefully that happens with Speedway. And what they're doing in WA with Dean Neal and the amazing scene over at the Motorplex and down in Bunbury. Hopefully a little bit of that rubs off on the East Coast this summer.
Yeah.
And then we can start to see a little bit of forward progress. Because, the product, as Krause has talked about on plenty of occasions, is incredible. It's made for television. It's relatively cheap to broadcast. Got to get it away from this just crap pay-per-view structure that they've got, hiding it behind a paywall, only broadcasting to the few people who already love the sport, do what they're doing in Perth, putting it out there for free on a major platform like 7plus, even if it is a day late.
Yeah.
And watch it go crazy. Watch the sport boom back to where it has been before.
Yeah, it's not rocket science either. None of that is takes a genius to work out that that's what needs to happen. But yeah,
It'll fix your missing speedway issues probably as well.
Yeah. Yes. Correct. Because people will work out they can actually make a buck from it. So they're do you know what? We need a proper speedway that's in suburban Melbourne. Let's go and build one because we know we can sell it out 8 times a year and actually make some money. Yeah. Good point. Good point. All right, guys. Yes. Mark, do you want to roll your knots? I just don't want to steal any of yours. That's all.
Oh, okay. Really sad news out of the States this week with the news of the passing of Sherry Pollux. She lost her incredible fight with cancer, and she was a proper inspiration, and she will be missed. So that was really a sad way to start the week there. On lighter matters, I'd like to apologise for the acoustics on last week's podcast. Richard set up his desk in the TRT Melbourne kitchen slash dining area, and turns out it's a genuine echo chamber.
Mm.
And I'm here right now to dispel the rumour that the pod was recorded by two blokes sitting in a toilet. So
yeah,
there you go.
That did not happen. Joao Guan Yu has signed on to continue driving for Alfa Romeo in Formula One. Good for him. That's fine. But it's a hard not to me because I still struggle to spell his name.
Yes.
And say it would appear.
Joe.
Yeah, 100%. Nowhere. Yeah, Sonoda's easy. Bottas has four T's in it. Logan Sargeant has a random E in it. But, anyway, that's a not to me. On F1, I'd like to nod all the Holden fans who crucified Fabian Coulthard for his go slow at Bathurst in 2019 when they didn't blow up about Charles on the weekend, when he did the exact same thing.
Oh, yeah, trying to back the field up. Yeah, nice. Yeah,
no one cared. Yeah, whatever. Well, you get on with life, don't you?
Yep.
Slightly different circumstances there, but yep.
Yep.
Singapore Grand Prix. No, it's not as if crazy things happen in the Singapore Grand Prix.
Yeah, well, this is true.
Auto Action's reporting that Motorsport Australia is looking at backing a return for Formula 4 next season. That's all. Not. To supercar things, should I leave the security not to you,
yeah,
Richard?
Please. Yeah.
Okay, good. I'll move on. Couple of high horse safety things from Sandown. Firstly, it's the wall on driver's left at the S's at the back of the back straight, turn 8 there. Look, that wall was put there originally to shelter the old horse racing starting chute that used to go up there, which no longer is a thing. Basically now, it's just there is something to hit or flip over, as the case was in 2019 with the Toyota 86. Now, here's some numbers on. I've gone and crunched them. Supercars at that right apex of turn 7 are going around 185 k's an hour. And if you're going in a straight line from there, if you just skidded straight on from the racing line, from the edge of the track to the tyre barrier, it's about 56 metres. And in that old 56 metres, you've got the old international track there, which is a launch ramp. And if it's a typical Sandown race, meaning the grass is wet, so you're not going to slow down at all. Fortunately, on the weekend, it was dry and no one went off there. Last year, when we did our unseen Sandown feature for the racetalk.com, there was an extra line of tyres there, which was about 47 metres off the side of the track, three rows deep, bound by rubber belting with the four row deep tyres behind it. This year, we've returned that stack 47 metres away from the track as it had been removed, leaving just a four deep tyre barrier in front of an earth bank that's at worse than a 90 degree angle of attack to cars going at 185 k's an hour. And, you know, if you hit that at that speed, you're not going to walk away. That's just, it's awful. It's 2023. We shouldn't be dealing with this rubbish. And it's in plain sight. It's garbage. We shouldn't be dealing with that. Thank God Garth speared off to the right into the Armco. If he went left, we wouldn't be making light of that whole situation. That was, that's not good. Secondly, and I'll be very unpopular with all my photography friends, but they need to have some photographer briefings, for God's sake, before we kill some of the newbies who just turn up there and they don't know what they're doing. It'll bugger up them and it'll bugger it up for everyone else if someone gets hurt because they just don't really know what I'm doing. I'm not a saint, but you got to think of safety when you're standing at their trackside. For instance, on the weekend, I saw one person who I'd love to name, but in my 25 years of taking photos at race meetings, I've never seen them before. And at the start of the Super Utes race, they were standing hard up against the Armco on driver's right on the run down at turn 1 with their back to traffic. Now, There's form for photographers being cleaned up in that area. Back in 1998, a photographer got their leg broke when a car gave a glancing blow to the fence that went back and hit them. They were watching the car come towards them. So if they were able to flinch a bit, if that saved them, you're back to traffic. You can't flinch. You don't know what's going to hit you. And Super Utes do have a bit of form on the board with crashing on the run to first turn as of the last race that they ran before that. So that wasn't great.
That's very Rear Window by Alfred Hitchcock, isn't it? The photographer getting hit by the race car.
That's
getting the broken leg.
I don't think anyone's ever mentioned Alfred Hitchcock on this podcast.
It's a new one.
Yeah.
But like all the officials who work in the demarcation lane have a safety briefing each day, and here's all the photographers, and a lot of them seem to not know what they're doing, and they're just let loose out there, and I don't think that's great. Motorsport's dangerous, but it doesn't have to be. End rant.
Thank you. Surprised no one's mentioned the start time yet.
Yeah.
That's a not too late. Even with
I get it. Like, they're even trying to bite it up to the end of the day. I get why.
You want to, but at a place like Sandown, you have to have some flexibility for fence repairs because there's a lot of traditions at that place, and one of them is that fixing the Armco takes forever. So the race was pushed 15 minutes later because of the crash that bent the Armco, and as a result, we had the Sandown 490, not the Sandown 500. So and possibly, maybe not, but possibly denied us an even better finish than the one we've got. So that's frustrating. You've got to put some fat into it somewhere. Half an hour earlier would have saved everybody some embarrassment over that. I know why they want to go late. Everyone knows why they want to go late. They want to push as deep as they can into the afternoon. It's better for TV ratings. It just everything's better if it runs later. But when you've got a place where with the strictest noise curfew in the sport, you probably need to build yourself a little bit more buffer. Sacrifice 1,000 people watching on television for actually getting the full race in and watching the full replay, Mark.
Look, they legitimately had to tow the cars back to the pits after the podium because it was past.
They weren't allowed to fire them. Yeah, exactly right. So that's no good. It's seriously half an hour and you wouldn't have had a drama. And then we get to the elephant in the room, which is the security at the weekend. That is the worst group of security contractors I've ever seen policing gates at a racetrack. That was horrible. And I got countless responses from people saying the same thing when they tried to get in. And Mark, wasn't it one morning where the media were let in, but they weren't letting teams and drivers through the gate? That seems to be counterintuitive. I mean, great for media. What a good story. But the stars of the show probably need to get through.
We put it in the power rankings. We got all the feedback back, and we got actually some positive feedback for them. Like, for instance, the boot searches at the Red Hill Park and View section. Do you have any alcohol in the car? Mm. No. Oh, good. Off you go. The number of people I saw drinking VB cans on that hill suggests that security was not very good.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really bad. And it's not the first time it's been really bad at Sandown. So I don't know what it is. It was just terrible. The only other knot I'm going to throw in this week, boys, and I've done a little bit of digging on this, and I'll rattle through it quickly because we have been going a long time, and thanks for sticking by us if you've been listening. Lap records. So the decision was made somewhere that supercars would reset all their lap records this year. So every round we've been to, there's a brand new lap record.
Correct.
Why?
It's
the same category. It's the same. Bear with me. It's the same.
You know what my answer is going to be.
I do. And I will give you the airtime to do it. But they didn't reset the lap records when the sport fundamentally changed in 1985 when they went to Group A, which on occasion were 5 or 6 seconds a lap slower everywhere than the former Group C regs. They didn't change the lap records when they went from Group A to the 5-liter rules in 1993. They didn't change the lap records when they went to the blueprint cars. They didn't change the rules when they went to Car of the Future. Why all of a sudden have they changed it? And the reason is because they're worried that the things are slower than the previous generation cars.
Yes. Every generation of car that you've talked about there had faster cars. So you're always going to be breaking the lap record.
But who cares? Seriously, lap records are the only historical context you have for how fast that category goes at a racetrack. And by the end of Group A, they were miles quicker than the cars were in Group C. And when they got to those lap times that Brock was doing in 84 and, you know, George Fury, it took them 4 or 5 years to get to the George Fury Bluebird lap time. But when they did, everyone was like, how good? This is awesome. And there's no doubt that with 4 or 5 years of development, these Gen 3 cars will get quicker because that's the evolution of a racing car. They'll go faster. Tire technology will change. Teams will get them quicker. They're only, on average, 2% slower per lap than the previous cars. At some circuits, it's a lot less. At longer tracks, it's a lot more. Like for Wanneroo, for some reason, they were miles slower than the previous cars. At Simmons Place, Simmons Plains, all straight line, they weren't much slower at all. At Albert Park, they weren't actually that far off the pace of the old cars for their first time out. I bet if they went there back now with everything they've learned over the last 9 rounds, they'd probably be quicker again. I just don't think it's right. I don't think it's right to change it. And it's going to be exposed at Bathurst because everyone knows the lap records at Bathurst. So they're just going themselves a hiding. And I'm not shocked that it hasn't been talked about by anyone in the industry, really, because I just think it's a little bit embarrassing that you're just sort of hiding from it. And I honestly don't think I don't think it's an issue. So what, the cars are a little bit slower. It doesn't really matter. They'll get quicker at some point. That's the nature of the sport.
I think the cars were a little quicker. Yeah, I get your point. I think the cars were a little quicker than they thought they were going to be in terms of lap time as well. So a few things. One, I'm actually surprised this didn't come up at Newcastle.
Mm.
And two, I playing devil's advocate for it, if the disparity of lap time was going to be so great, then there would have been no sort of year-on-year comparison when we get back. Every time it would have been like, there's Scotty McLaughlin's lap record and here's the Gen 3 record. So whilst it's a little bit cringy this year, it will make a little bit more sense next year when it's sort of like, okay, at least we're comparing apples to apples. Because otherwise the lap time that you did in a 10th year generation super Gen 2 car is always going to be so much quicker than the Gen 3 car that, at least that's what their thinking was originally when they come up with this, that it was not going to be comparable. And to be honest, I don't think it matters for 11 of the 12 tracks this year.
No, it doesn't.
But you're right. It's going to really matter at Bathurst.
Yeah.
We're all going to be, you know, it's... Although, tell me what the lap record is for a supercar at Bathurst.
Well, it's a 4.7 set by Chas Mostert.
There you go. Not a lot of people think about the race lap record there. No, they always associate the qualifying lap record.
And that's going to be worse. I just don't think it's the same category. Yeah, they've changed their regs. It's the same category. I don't think there are categories around the world that have had fundamental technical changes to make the cars quicker or slower. And Formula One's probably the obvious example here, where they're perennially trying to slow the things down. And the lap records have remained a constant for the 70 years of Formula One racing. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just the stats person in me. Anyway,
it's fair.
I only stumbled on it when I looked at the little lap record next to who said it on the weekend. I think it was Shane, wasn't it?
It happens in practice too. Every event just about we go to this year, unless it's raining. You'll see it on timing.
I saw the little R next to it. I thought, hang on a minute. They've gone quicker than that round Sandown before. Anyway.
Yep.
That was my
Yeah, look, I don't agree with it, but I get why.
Mm. Mm. Anyway, that's us for this week. Thanks for jumping on, Chad. It's been great.
Thanks. Thanks
for
having me.
You are now officially, and I'm doing the sort of sword on the shoulders thing, you are friend of the show, Chad Nalum.
I bow my head to the great honour.
And thank you for giving us the dialing code to Andorra.
Yes. And all it's cost you is one banh mi roll from Bun Bun.
Correct.
Which is so cheap.
Totally.
Yeah. And you get changed from a tenner.
Brilliant.
We didn't even get stuck into how good your night was watching Two Fits of Pink Floyd.
Oh, mate.
But that's an entirely different pod. We didn't.
But it's usually Shebex that goes off the rails on these pods, not me. So that could be a full hour I would spend. Closing thoughts from you, Mark?
Yeah, as a friend of the podcast, you've now got to cover your windscreen in mud and try and drive down to the Barn Me shop. So congratulations. Yeah. Good luck with that.
Excellent. Well, it's already covered in mud, so
that's halfway there.
Step one done. Yep.
Brilliant. Thanks, Chad. Thank you, Mark.
No worries.
Thanks, guys.
We will talk to you next week when Shebex is back with another rubbish racehorse. This has been On The Grid. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast from. We'll talk to you in a week's time. Bye for now.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.